Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for stage 13 of the Vuelta, where, I don't know, nearly two-thirds the way through the race, and it's a transition day. It's what we'd call it in the Tour de France. It's 170 kilometers long, no categorized climbs. They were inland, but going south, I think, in Andalusia, bypassing Malaga. There are some decent climbs around there, but not today. That'll be tomorrow and on the Sunday. There is an interesting little finish. It's one of those ones. It's not a pure sprint stage. It wasn't going to be a breakaway stage. Just an interesting sort of shallow gradient drag of like 4% and then an uphill kick of, I don't know, 650 meters, 5%, a couple of turns like at right angles. But it's not one for the punchers. Maybe peak Alaphilippe. Even then, it's probably still a little bit too easy for him. Pedersen was the favorite of the stage. But as always, this show is brought to you by Zwift. Zwift season is truly here, given that there's literally hail outside my door right now. Fortunately, it's not golf ball size like it was elsewhere. But yeah, autumn is here in the Northern Hemisphere. Zwift has a raft of updates landing soon. So if you want to fire up the account again or get a new subscription with a free 7-day trial, head to Zwift.com. There's training series like Zwift Academy, which has registration open now. So there's never been a better time to give indoor training a shot. So go to Zwift.com through the link down below for that. But Benji, no serious break rather. It was a sprint the minute we turned on the TV today.
Yeah, exactly. We had that typical breakaway where we expected it to be potentially Spanish Conti riders or a bigger break that could go for the stage. It was partially the first one, as in it had two Conti Spanish riders, but there was also another rider from EF, Julius van den Berg, also in this breakaway, together with Okamika and Jean Bou. So yeah, that's the breakaway. I decided to pack it up. I decided to have my siesta for once, and I arrived back with about 20 kilometers and turned out nothing has happened in the meanwhile. So I also got my break day in during this Vuelta, basically. But hey, we were looking like a sprint would happen because the gap had gone up to like 3 minutes, but controlled by multiple teams like Trek. I think Bike Exchange was doing so as well. So basically the teams you'd expect to control a stage like this. I think Cofidis had a hand in it as well, with Kokar still being in this race at this very moment. And the gap was going down a minute with about 20 kilometers to go. When you see that, it's like, okay, they're getting caught, eh? So break was caught with about 14 kilometers to go is my rough guess from my memory. So we had a sprint coming up and it felt like it was odd because, I don't know, you had sprint teams trying to get their sprinters to the front, but also you had other riders at the front, like a Nibali would be at the front with a Battistella in the wheel because a Battistella would think, okay, perhaps this finish would also fit me. And it would add more riders that wouldn't necessarily go on a flat sprint also to the game, but also included the generic GC teams keeping their riders at the front. What did you notice in the run-in towards the sprint?
Yeah, it was, well, what I noticed was, I was like, it's a shame Ineos don't have Sheffield here, or I don't know. It felt like to me a Finesse attack could have worked on this finish because the favorite Pedersen just has Kirsch. Van Poppel has had Mullen working all day. Teams don't have four domestiques each. I thought a Finesse attack had a really good chance, but there's actually not that guy here like a Laporte on that stage he stole. So yeah, it was all about position, who was going to go too early. I was also thinking, what are you going to do? Because when they got it right in Tour of Poland, it'll uphill finish, maybe even sharper than this. Milano let out Ackermann and it was perfection and they cleaned. I don't know where Ackermann won. I think Milano might have still come second or top five. And I thought Ackermann's actually always been underrated on little uphill drags. He's good on them. But yeah, those two, Milano, I checked a tape, Benji, where you mentioned when Milano was leading out. He was leading out, looked back, saw Ackermann wasn't there. And I would say he did the right thing. Then he just went for his own sprint on the Sprint Groves one the other day. So their chemistry's not been great at all. For Jumbo, I was thinking, who are they going to go for? Is it Roglic bonus seconds or Mike Turnison's very, very handy on a finish like this? Remember, it's still a sprint. It's just uphill draft is still important. They're still going 45 Ks an hour or 40 Ks an hour. And Israel, I was like, are they going to go for Impey or Bevan? So I was just a lot of questions, basically. And Van Poppel as well, Benji, I feel like he almost got a little bit overrated today because he doesn't have Danny Van Poppel. And that makes a huge, huge difference. What did you see in the run into the finish?
I was looking at Alpecin for a bit because while Jumbo and Ineos were taking it up on like the uphill section going into the last 4 kilometers, they were trying to keep their GC riders to the front and perhaps for Jumbo also go for the stage here or there. It seemed like Alpecin was moving up on the right side in a way that didn't really work out for them. First, they had two riders move up, which was not Merlier and Sothoff. It was also not the last man in front of Merlier, but the two riders in front of that. So they moved up, and then we had Merlier sitting a bit further, who did not follow those two riders, with his last man behind him. Then his last man came past him to try and move Merlier to the front, but then Merlier didn't follow his wheel. So Merlier just basically stayed in the same position until the sprint came up, and by then he was too far to remotely do anything. Also, let's be honest about it, this finish wouldn't have fit for him, in my personal opinion. I think it's too hard for Merlier compared to other sprinters here, but it's not ideal to have a situation where Merlier is the one that is supposed to be in the wheel of his lead out and he just doesn't follow any of the riders that move up from his team. So I don't know what happened there. I don't know if he was too scared for a gap to be too tiny or something like that, but that wasn't working out for them and that was just not going to happen. Groves tried to move up in the same fashion on the right side of the road, and at a certain point I felt like that was going to work out, but then on the other side, I felt like in the last 4 kilometers, Ineos was also still pushing forward with Rodriguez and with Gegenhardt in the wheel of Klok and Van Baarle. And then it was it Jumbo that started properly kicking it off into one of the corners?
There's a little uphill, then a quick descent, then they turn right into a corner, and then it's uphill and it snakes round and it goes to the left with 200 to go. You can't see where the finish line is. With about 250 to go, maybe that makes a big difference in this finish. But yeah, Jumbo smashed on the right-hand side. Pedersen's in okay position. Van Poppel, Groves are fighting for his wheel. UAE eventually claim it with Ackermann in front of Milano. Roglic loses his man's wheel, and I thought it was deliberate because he was getting his last man was leading him out with 600 meters to go. That's way too early uphill. And I thought, oh, lose the man's wheel and then other people close it. You reestablish your position in about fifth wheel and then you can sprint from there whilst they're having to do more work. But Roglic, he does this quite often. He just closed the gap himself and that cost him a good chance of this sprint. Pedersen goes to the front. Roglic and the Jumbo-Visma rider pull off. Ackermann in his wheel. Camera angle changes. Suddenly see from the front with like 30 seconds left in the sprint. Ackermann has launched in the hoods. Pedersen's jumped to his wheel. It surprised everyone else before this left-hand corner. Van Poppel, Groves get squeezed into eternity. Cocard's nowhere to be seen. Pedersen takes the draft of Ackermann, who launched. Like, he might not have known where the finish line was. If he had a lead out, I thought if Milano comes fast with speed or one of them, I don't care which, just one of them leads out the other, like a Van Poppel, whilst Pedersen stalled on the right, if they hit with speed on the left, that's going to give them a really good chance of winning this. But Ackermann just launched his sprint and Pedersen gets the draft and absolutely cleans him up. Cocard's finished well. He loves these little drags like in Tour de la Provence to Manosque. He won that stage, I think, this year. He eventually came second for the 40 UCI points. Ackermann third, Wright fourth, Van Poppel fifth, Pascher sixth, Esquerra seventh, Van Hills eighth, Roglic ninth, and Berarda and Galvan 10th and 11th on Equipo Kern Farmer. Not a stage I'll remember for the rest of my life. But I guess Pedersen gets it done. And asks the question again, Benji, can he hold this form for world championships? Is there much left in the parkour for him? What would you do if you were him?
Well, about that, can he hold this form for world championships? I think he can, but he's not on the Danish list. He's not selected. And I think it was his own decision, but I'm not sure about it. I think they are going for riders like Søren Kronersen, Skelmos, and riders like that, a Valgren and a Kortz, and they don't have Pedersen on the list for the selection for the world championship. So regardless of whether he's in form or not for it, I guess we will never know. And that's a bit unfortunate, because I would have loved to see this form of a Mads Pedersen at least try, because it's not the same as a Caleb Ewan, you know? Like, with Mads Pedersen, he became world champion on a parkour that was consecutive hills, right? It was not as hard as Wollongong, though. It's different, but it's still consecutive hills. And with a Ewan, I think the consecutiveness of those hills would have been an issue for a Ewan. Like, one Mount
Pedersen's
Pleasant,
Pedersen's a pure
fine.
Classics rider as well. Yeah. Like, and he's just... when he's in shape, his fitness, he's just really, really impressive. There's also, though, I just looked while you were speaking, there's three more stages he can win. Madrid in 21, maybe stage 19. Maybe. It's a little bit hard. And stage 16 as well. Looks like one he could possibly win too. So, and he wants the green jersey at the Vuelta, the points jersey. Whether that's worth going for world champs as a rider of his caliber, I'm not sure, but it's a big trip. I think if it was not in Australia, it might be a little bit different. The Australian trip makes a big difference. Cockard said he was going to leave as well to go and hunt points, which I think is a bit of a shame. I don't know if he will after this stage. I don't think the Vuelta should allow that, frankly, like riders leaving a Grand Tour to just go chase points while the Vuelta's on. Now, maybe he's just going to rest for a week and a half and then chase them after the world, so that's fine. anything else from this stage, Benji? I would have liked to have seen Peñalva do it from Burgos, but he didn't start the Vuelta. Impey 15th. Who else? Melier. Is there an issue with Melier? Is it motivation at the end of the Alpecin contract? Is Lefebvre worried yet?
I think this was positioning. Like, I've spoken about the Alpecin train earlier, where they had trouble making Merlier's way forward in this stage. And first of all, this parkour is too hard to win for Merlier. Like, I don't see it. And next to that, if you can't get him to the front before this final hill comes up, then you also won't have it happen. So just positioning on this parkour, not getting him to the front, not necessarily the team's fault either, because there were moments where Merlier didn't go to the front himself when he could. So decision-making on that regard, not trusting his lead-out completely here, I think those are all details that might mark why Melier is not competitive on this parkour today. But I'll be honest about it. You said it. It's not the most enthusiastic stage, let's call it that. I do like seeing Fred Wright and Quentin Pacher in the top six, especially because I called Fred Wright from the breakaway and didn't name anyone for the sprint, so I'm happy to at least see my breakaway guy do decent in the sprint. You got it right with Mads Pedersen. Obviously, he was the favorite, but I still want to give you credit for that. But
I think Bennett would have cleaned this up. I think Bennett and his legs would have smashed this with Van Poppel leading him out. What about Jakobsen? You think he makes it? I always find these mixed ones really interesting to see who can do. Like Philipsen, yes, tick. We think he can do this finish. Jakobsen, maybe he's in the Merlier camp. I don't know. Ewan's quite good on these two. Little, you know, like a pocket rocket. Anyway, no changes on GC. Points-wise, Pedersen, he's on 250. Soler's on 96. He's winning that jersey. No change in KOM. And UAE still leading teams. Tomorrow's stage is finishing on Sierra de la Bandera. First of two mountaintop finishes on the weekend. It's a pretty soft start beforehand, actually. About 100 Ks of flat. There's a Cat 3 that's 10 Ks, 3.5% descent. Then they've broken up so that Pandera you can approach from the south or the north? Last time they did it, they approached it from the south, from Hien, which I think was a little bit of an easier approach with a longer gap between the two climbs. But they did the Puerto de los Villares, which is 10Ks, 5.5%, a very short, maybe 5-minute rest, maybe less, and then Pandera, 8.6Ks, 7.5%. It is a little bit of a fake news climb because there's literally a descent in the last section of it. You'll remember last time this was used, I think Lopez got a small gap and Froome and co. were chasing behind and there weren't huge gaps. But there's two hard kilometers, 11.5 and 12% in the fifth and sixth kilometers. So maybe we see some attacks there. It pretty much is 18, 19 kilometers of continual climbing. So it is a long effort, similar to Peñas Blancas the other day, actually a little bit harder at the end. So what do you reckon, Benji? I think it has to be break again because who's going to chase?
Exactly. I think it's a similar situation as Peñas Blancas. There could be the thing where the initial breakaway formation takes so long that it might give an opportunity for the peloton to be so close to the finish line that they think, okay, some team might pick it up, like an Astana for a Lopez, but I think that's more likely with the Sierra Nevada stage. I think when it comes to the breakaway, I'm looking at a few candidates. I expect an Evrider to be in there. They are all in, like, there's three of them in, like, 17th. Am I correct? GC? Yes. 17th, 18th, and 20th in GC on 11 minutes, 13 minutes, and 15 minutes. So that's the kind of distance you want when you want to go in the breakaway, have some leeway, and then perhaps hop into the top 10 by accident by the end, like Kelderman did on stage on Peñas Blancas. But I'm going to go for El Jaguar de Tulcán for a second one because he's lost 3 minutes today. And I think that's on purpose to lose three more minutes to be on 15 minutes as well to get in the breakaway tomorrow. What do you think?
That's not a bad shout. I mean, there's a lot of musical chairs, isn't there? I'm looking like, because Evenepoel doesn't care. And so Ineos and UAE going to chase to stop the EF riders getting in the break because they'll be threatening Almeida's eighth position on GC. I think David de la Cruz wins tomorrow's stage. He was very strong in week three of the Vuelta last year. My concern is he doesn't frequently get in breakaways. Nor does the flat start suit him. But yeah, I think De La Cruz did. I'm just checking where he finished. So he beat Hindley. He finished just ahead of O'Connor, just behind Almeida on Peñas Blancas. So GC competitive, that's what we're looking for here. I think he's a big chance from the break. Menke's, again, he's on 11:15. Why wouldn't he get in the break? Valverde has to get in the break, has to, for points, and try and move up on GC. So there could be, and Pedun, it's just musical chairs everywhere with the GC. Pozzo, Igita, like, wow. Landa, is he still here? Landa's still here. So there's so many options. We should see a huge break tomorrow again with Soler, Reichenbach, Pino can never make a break to save his life. He's got to get in tomorrow. Maeda, Agüita, Luis Leon, Jay Vine, Pozzo, Carapaz, Pedun, EF guys, as Benji mentioned. What about GC? Who do I think will win? Rain Tarame, I think, will win from the break. I think he goes clear on the steeper sections if he's just going to make it in. I think he wins.
Okay, when it comes to GC, I don't have too many expectations necessarily different from stage we already had because it's kind of similar, like you said, to a Peñas Blancas, stuff like that. We might see similar types of scenarios happening on a climb like that. Now, with this climb, it's just intriguing, you know, because you've also got that like valley part in the middle, so that's kind of a point where if a group is smaller at the front, that some people might start coming back a tiny bit. Some people might find a second win with GC-wise, but I just don't expect the craziest differences on Sierra de la Pandera. And maybe I'm making a mistake in that. Maybe an Evenepoel will drop everybody again. But I kind of feel like we might just see one of the GC riders lose time, or two of them in the top eight-ish. But for the rest, I don't expect major gaps GC-wise. What's your take there?
Yeah, I kind of agree. It could just be quick step pacing. I think Lopez will try and sneak away and get a few seconds. Movistar will mark him. I wonder if Jumbo just paced because Evenepoel had the crash the other day, then who else will pace? Movistar, will they try and get riders in the breakaway to be a satellite rider for Mas? I would suggest yes. If I was Mas, I would really, with the altitude on Sunday, I think you really have to be aggressive tomorrow because Roglic is better than him to altitude typically, and I think he needs to attack on the steeper section of Pandera. If Evenepoel goes with him, if Lopez goes with him, it doesn't matter. Try and move up in GC would be what I would do if I'm Mas. Whether he commits to it, I'm not so sure. But GC day, I think Tarame wins. Anyway, the big news of today actually was, unfortunately, COVID once again. Juan Ayuso testing positive for COVID on a PCR, but remaining in the Vuelta. Simon Yates, symptomatic, removed from the Vuelta last week. Pavel Sivakov, asymptomatic, left the Vuelta last week. Both were in the top 10 on GC. And I guess this happened in the Tour de France with Jungels, who won a stage, and Micah, who pulled on Grenon. But maybe explain, could you explain to people, Benji, I guess, what the process is and how it's working in ASO races? Because in the Giro, I don't believe this is the case.
Exactly. Basically, just before the Tour de France, the UCI decided to change their policy in regards to COVID. And it wouldn't just be, oh, you're positive, you're out, you're negative, you can stay in. It's not just that anymore. They made their system basically like this. We won't give any medical takes here, but this is what the process is being called. So when you do a PCR test, there's this thing called an RT-PCR. I won't go into the details of that. I will just say that there's now an extra thing to it, a number, a value that defines how COVID you are. That's actually like a crazy thing to say, but that number evaluates how infectious you are to be deemed. And that number is being decided by the amount of cycles in a process. So they're doing a testing process on your PCR test and the amount of cycles they need to go through with that process to find it viral enough to be considered positive and properly infectious. And the less cycles necessary to get to that amount of virality needed to be considered that specific amount of virality. I don't know the specific threshold there. That means the higher your infection risk is. The lower the cycles, the higher your infection risk. And when we reach X amount of cycles, you are indeed considered infectious enough to be out of the race. And this is where it gets interesting, because this test takes time to be done. And I've heard from, I think it was Sam Bennett that said, at some point the day before he was taken out of the race, or actually the day that he was taken out of the race, when he DNS because of COVID, that he was waiting in the bus and pinning his numbers just before the race, waiting for the results of his viral load, which this number is called. And this value, basically he was waiting still on that, and eventually he was out of the race. I don't know if he actually got that number before the race or he got that after he was already out of the race. So it's interesting. For some teams, it comes in time. For some teams, it seems to come in just too late. But when it comes to UAE, the special thing is that Machin came out this morning and he said, we've actually got our own PCR testing method or our machine in-house that causes us to be able to analyze that viral load ourselves. And because of that, they were on time to be able to see, when it comes to Yuzo, that he was on paper not infectious enough. And they went with that to the consolation, like the consul, which in the UCI rules is stated that once you figure out the viral load, you go to the UCI doctor, the organizer's doctor, and your own team doctor. Those three become like the Doctor Avengers for a second, and they decide based on majority vote if you can start or not. And I'm guessing with Jungels that was the case, with Micah that was the case, and with Ayuso that was the case, that the viral load was not high enough on their RT-PCR testing process compared to, for example, the other riders that stepped out of the race. Now, there's also think Herrera said something on Twitter about some riders that are waiting longer for their RT-PCR viral load results to come in. And the question there is then, my take on this, when it comes to UAE for a second, and when it comes to the UCI policy, do you think it's fair that when a specific policy is stated in the UCI rules, the specific policy that the viral load matters and is deciding whether a rider can stay in the race or not, that is not by default equally available for all teams?
Yeah, I'm surprised that it's smart that UAE have their machine. Like, I don't know how much they cost, but if it means your guy who's a top GC rider can stay in the race, it's going to pay for itself pretty quickly. But yeah, I'm surprised that teams, because like an Equipo Kern Pharma, they've had guys leaving left, right, and center that maybe they can't afford the machine. Like, is there a machine available that is available to everybody, but it just takes too long? And then by the time you get the results back, like, surely the race doctor has one at their disposal that they're carrying around. I don't know. So to understand, the less cycles necessary, so to find the viral load threshold, that means you're more infectious, and the reverse is true. So Ayuso didn't reach that threshold, and the independent organizer's doctor, UCI's medical doctor, and the team's doctor decided to keep him in, or by majority vote. So I guess there's also the case that other teams might just not do this, and they just have an internal rule that you test positive for COVID, you're out of the race for your own health or whatever. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case with Ineos. They don't say when Sivakov's out, you know, he said he was asymptomatic. It doesn't say his viral load or whatever. I don't know. I'm surprised. I feel like this is going to be, they're going to solidify this next year, because there's been so many COVID positives this Vuelta. And I would be surprised if, Ayuso was the only one of those people to be testing non-infectious, if that's a roundabout way of saying that.
Yeah, I think so as well. Obviously, not a doctor, want to keep declaring that. But there's also an interesting aspect that a few people brought up on Twitter today, where Ayuso, I think 3 or 2 days ago, I think just before the time trial, came out and said that he was feeling ill and was surprised that he did not test positive when it comes to his COVID test. And I think I read somewhere that he tested 3 times negative, but was feeling ill. And the obvious rumor now, obvious theory of people now is, oh, he had COVID and now only the leftovers are being tested positive. But yeah, this is how the rules work. Eh? He was tested negative. He was feeling ill. We don't know if that illness was related to COVID at that time. The tests say no. We don't know if that test was 100% conclusive, because not every test is. But on paper, he was negative during that time. So the rules declare that he doesn't need to be put out of the race at that moment. Now he is positive. But what is in his system when it comes to COVID is not COVID enough to get him out of the race. So people are like saying, oh, does that mean he had COVID and so forth? We don't know, eh? Like, we can never know that. I don't think we'll ever figure out that.
I mean, it seems pretty likely. So what you're telling me is that whilst maybe symptomatic for COVID, he was smashing Rodriguez on mountaintop finishes. I mean, damn, that's not looking good for your boy this weekend. He's going to be Rodriguez, although he beat him in the TT. But now I got an excuse for that TT. So, that's great. I think for Bike Exchange, it's not bittersweet in the sense that Yates couldn't continue. It was nothing to do with viral load testing. Yates was sick. So he was out regardless of this. Sivakov, I'm not sure. I don't know if there's an internal Ineos rule about it as well. So it's a bit of a mess. They're probably, with teams taking different positions on it, even next year, there probably won't be it's clear that UAE have taken the position that if the rider wants to continue, they're not symptomatic and they don't breach the viral load threshold, they can continue, like Mica and Ayuso in the Tour and the Vuelta, as well as AG2R with Jungels in the Tour de France. So yeah, it's just another sort of data point in how the sport is going to continue managing or not very well managing COVID. But I don't know. It seemed they got to sort out that testing machine thing, because it does seem unfair that if the smaller teams can't access it, that half their team's gone without maybe, you know, benefiting from it. But yeah, any last thoughts on Ayuso, Benji? I mean, I'm just going to assume his performance will be fine from here on out.
Yeah, I guess that's what we have to assume, eh? We don't know how much influence was and will be when it comes to that. We will just see what he brings on those climbs, and I think it's going to be similar than the days we had before, unless he's at the precipice of getting proper COVID. That is just him getting into COVID, then he might be out at a certain point. We don't know that. Let's hope he's not. Let's hope he keeps on kicking. Let's hope we see him on the road in a few days. One more thing I have that is actually a question. Like, I don't actually know. Is we see that he is being tested as a positive right now, and this is not on a rest day, so this is an in-team test, most likely. Now, I'm pretty sure the rule says that teams only need to test on rest days now. If you're UAE, like, do you expect them to test every single day until that rest day still? Or do you expect them to just do the test again on the rest day?
I think it sounds like they're always test. UAE do tests every day, and did at the Tour de France. So it sounds like UAE have a sort of more onerous testing regimen for COVID than other teams, or than they are required to have, which I guess is a good thing. And so I'd expect them to keep testing. Yep. What's curious though, Benji, is what happens if he keeps testing on the rapid test or whatever test they're using? He tests positive tomorrow, and as you said, just positive tomorrow on it. Do they do the reverse viral load test again? Because they have to, right? Like, what if his viral load's gone up? So they have to keep doing that, I guess. Otherwise, you're keeping in the race when he's infectious. So yeah, very interesting. Hopefully, it doesn't affect the GC battle any more than it already has. But yeah, Pandora tomorrow. We'll see what happens. Another mountaintop finish before Nevada. Thanks, as always, for listening to the show. Thanks to Zwift for supporting LRCP always. We'll see you with the recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.